It's 5 hours West Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Pakistani officials say a suicide bomb blast at a crowded public park in eastern city of Lahore Sunday killed at least 65, wounded hundreds more, women and children among them. Reporter Ayaz Ghul has details.
This is a very famous park in the city, and in fact it was Easter, and most of members of the Christian community, they were also present with their kids, and apparently a suicide bomber struck the area of the park where mostly kids were playing with their parents.
And as reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad, United States condemning in the strongest terms that attack in Lahore, calling it a cowardly act in what has long been a scenic and placid park. Also in the news, authorities in Mali say two men with alleged links to al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb have been arrested in connection with the March 13th terror attack in the Ivory Coast resort town of Grand Bassam. At least 19 people died there. Ivory Coast last week said it had 15 other suspects that they are in custody as well. The North African branch of al-Qaeda also has claimed responsibility for a hotel assault in November in Mali that killed 20 people and a similar attack in January that killed 30 others in Burkina Faso. Syrian media and activists say Syrian government forces backed by Russian airstrikes have retaken the ancient city of Palmyra from the Islamic State, dealing a crucial, symbolic, and strategic defeat to the militants. Islamic State took the city from government forces in a matter of days back in May of 2015. This is VOA News. Belgian riot police clashed Sunday with hundreds of protesters. It happened in central Brussels, despite a ban on demonstrations in effect through Tuesday. The protesters gathered at the Stock Exchange to express solidarity with the victims of last Tuesday's multiple bombings at the airport and a subway station that killed at least 31, wounded hundreds more. The investigation into the March 22nd attacks appears to show links to last November's terror attacks in Paris that killed 130. Authorities have conducted raids and arrested several suspects across Europe in recent days. In a U.S. broadcast interview Sunday, Secretary of State John Kerry, who met with European and Belgian officials Friday in Brussels, said the U.S. is cooperating in an effort to prevent such attacks in the future.
We've been looking for additional screening. We've been engaged, actually, with the Belgian authorities for some period of time now, trying to fill gaps that they're aware exist. And I think everybody is now geared up to recognize that the fight is not just in Iraq and Syria, but the fight is wherever those fighters have come from.
The Brussels airport remains closed, and there is no indication that it will reopen anytime soon. Meanwhile, the U.S. government has confirmed that so far, four Americans are known to be dead in the Brussels bombing attacks. At least 12 others were wounded. A French national suspected of involvement in planning a terror attack has been arrested in the Netherlands. 32-year-old, whose identity has not been released, was arrested Sunday at the request of French authorities in the port city of Rotterdam. He is expected to be extradited to France soon. Three other people were detained in the raid. Two of them were described as the ages of 43 and 47 and having an Algerian background, while the third has not yet been identified. Turning now to U.S. politics, just off his sweep of three Democratic caucuses, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders on Sunday declared his campaign has momentum to win over his rival, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
And that is how we win, when working people and young people, when people who have given up on the political process get back in and demand a government that represents all of us, not the 1%. That's how we win.
Some political observers have said Clinton's lead is insurmountable and argue that Sanders should drop out and allow her to focus on the eventual Republican presidential nominee. Sanders on Sunday rejected those calls. Get more news by going to our website. You can find us at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voice of America, I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Monday, March 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudan says it has never used children in armed conflict.
In our laws, children are protected. We don't use children as soldiers, and we don't at all involve them in war or conflict.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's information minister, who is behind the Benin massacres in the Democratic Republic of Congo. A female suicide bomber says she is one of the Chibok girls of Nigeria abducted by Boko Haram in 2014. And Nigeria's Electoral Commission says condition for conducting rerun elections in Rivers State.
Once the atmosphere is conducive, we will return to River State. When that will be, I really don't know, but the statement makes it quite clear. The commission will not expose its staff, it will not expose voters and its critical stakeholders to violence.
Oluwale Usaze Uzi is Director for Voter Education and Publicity at the Independent National Electoral Commission of Nigeria. We will hear from the people of Rivers State, and East Africa considers a ban on secondhand clothes. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The government of Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir says it has never used children in armed conflicts. On the contrary, Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says rebels fighting against the government in Blue Nile, Darfur, and South Kordofan have been using child soldiers. This came after Sudan and the United Nations on Sunday signed the action plan to protect children from violations in armed conflict. Bilal says the only mistake Sudan made was not signing the action plan earlier.
I tell you that Sudan never in our laws, children are protected. We don't use children as soldiers, and we don't at all involve them in war or conflicts. But the mistake which came up, and to be Sudan, the only maybe country in this disgrace, is that we didn't find the agreement. Now we find it, and we are quite committed as before and even stronger not to use children at all in conflict.
If you say you are not using children in armed conflict, are the rebels fighting against you? Do you know if any of them have been using children?
We know actually the rebels use the children and they use them in the conflict. And when the attack on Durman maybe 8 years ago or 7 years ago, we arrested about 83 of the children, which we didn't bring them to court because they were underage. And they are still using the children. This is the armed movement. But for us as a government, we never at all use this. The only thing which is taken against Sudan, we didn't sign the agreement. And now we find it.
So, Minister, there was some African Union-sponsored talk that was going on in Ethiopia. We understand that your government has signed the roadmap agreement. Have the rebels signed?
No, they didn't. Actually, tomorrow will be the last day after the high panel. They gave them 1 week to sign. Sudan have signed it. Although we have some reservations, but we are committed and we signed the roadmap. And we are actually telling them, and you're telling them that we are committed to peace. The negotiations should go directly to peace. We want peace and stability. We want to stop war. So I think if they are serious and genuine towards peace, they have to sign the roadmap. We know that they are not together. The Darfur movement might sign. The SPLM North, they are hesitant. But they just give us some time and then we come. And they gave them 1 week. Tomorrow will be the last day.
So if the rebels do not sign the roadmap, what happens next?
From our side, actually, this is will reveal that Sudan government is keen and genuine about peace. And everybody now in the world, they are worried about wars and conflicts. And they have to exert some sort of pressure against them so that they can join. In the past, they said the Sudan government is not willing to reach peace agreements. And now we prove that we are so genuine and we are keen. Otherwise, the President Thabo Mbeki will give a report to the African Peace Security and after that to the International Security Court. The African Security Council and the International Security Council as well will have to take some decisions about this, and they have to make resolutions and pressure against them.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's Minister of Information, he was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. The Independent National Electoral Commission of Nigeria, known as INEC, says it will not return to Rivers State to conduct rerun local government elections unless the atmosphere there is conducive to do so. Oluwale Osaze Uze, Director for Voter Education and Publicity, says the commission will not expose voters and its staff to danger. A rerun election took place on March 19th, but results in 9 local government constituencies were declared inconclusive by INEC due to violence. The governor of Rivers State is a member of the opposition People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. Some in Rivers State have accused INEC of collusion with the ruling All Progressive Party, the APC, to deprive the people of their choice. But Osaze Uze says while there were some challenges in INEC's operational efficiency, there were no fake result sheets or materials used.
On the contrary, we will conduct elections, but the atmosphere has to be conducive for conduct of elections. Elections are all about choices by people. And where there are bombs going off, gunshots, violence, intimidation of voters or election officials, then that cannot be atmosphere that's conducive. Once the atmosphere is conducive, we will return to Rivers State. When that will be, I really don't know, but the statement makes it quite clear. The commission will be the responsible constitutional body. It will not expose its staff. It will not expose voters and its critical stakeholders to violence. So where there's clear and present danger of violence, threat to those categories of people, then certainly we can, in those circumstances, try to conduct elections there. We'll not expose people unnecessarily.
The allegations that was made was that they accused your commission of collusion between this commission and the ruling party. What do you say to that?
Well, I really don't know who the ruling party is. The party in the Rivers State governorship is occupied by the PDP. The president of the country belongs to the APC. So it's in Rivers State, a different party from the central. But it is wrong, it is false, it has no basis in fact to say that INEC colluded with anybody. It has absolutely no basis in fact. And it's interesting that both principal parties, both the PDP and the APC, have accused INEC of colluding one with the other. I think it's born out of mistrust between both parties.
The understanding was that the people of Rivers, they made their choice, and I think they claim collusion because they thought the choice of the people was not being respected.
Well, they made their choice when? For those constituencies, if it's the rerun you're referring to, for those constituencies, they have made their choice. We've made returns. And we, in our own belief, it reflected what the people wanted, those returns that we have made. They could not have freely made their choice in the other constituencies, or they were not allowed to make the choice. The commission had to suspend the exercise in those other, all other consequences.
So do you have any idea when INEC is going to go back there to conduct the rest of the election?
Well, I cannot put a time frame. If tomorrow peace returns and we get those guarantees and the security agencies say it is safe to go back and get those guarantees from the political parties that are contesting our election and from their supporters and from leaders, then we'll go back tomorrow. But if it takes longer than that, I'm afraid that we'll have to wait until the atmosphere is conducive. We will not risk weather, but the danger will not risk lives.
Oluwale Osaze Uze is Director for Voter Education and Publicity at the Independent National Electoral Commission of Nigeria. He was speaking with me from Abuja. Voters in Nigeria's Rivers State are calling on the Independent National Electoral Commission of Nigeria to release all outstanding results from the March 19th local government rerun election. Austin Tam George, Rivers State's Commissioner for Information, says INEC cannot be allowed to collude with the ruling All Progressive People's Party of Nigeria to suppress the free will of the people.
We want the Independent Electoral Commission to release the results, the outstanding results of the elections that they conducted in Rivers State. Our view is that the people have made their choices, and they want those choices to be respected and known. Therefore, we are requesting INEC to obey the laws that say that once results have been collated at the unit levels, at the ward levels, they must be made known to the rest of society, and they must announce them unconditionally. The guarantees for security that the INEC is requesting, the state government will continue to support the security forces. But INEC must demonstrate that it will not collude with the All Progressives Congress, the opposition party in Rivers State, and that they will not collude with the military in order to gerrymander the process and steal the sovereignty of the people.
What evidence do you have that INEC is colluding with the ruling party, the APC?
As I speak, there is an INEC ad hoc staff that is in police custody, reported to the police by INEC resident electoral commissioner in Rivers State for electoral malpractice. And she's been accused by the police, and there is evidence supporting the allegation that she was working to rig the electoral process in favor of the All Progressives Congress. This is no longer a matter of personal opinion. If you check in the social media, there are images of her in police custody with stolen sensitive INEC materials that she diverted and was thumbprinting, rewriting results in favor of the APC. So what we want is for these individuals to be prosecuted. We want an independent inquiry into how the elections were conducted to the point where the military, in defiance of a Supreme Court judgment, got involved in electoral malpractice. Not all the military. We saw in some instances, reported cases of the military actually involved in this kind of misbehavior. And we condemn this, and we want the INEC to release the outstanding results expeditiously, because they are not just pieces of documentation. They embody the free choices made by the Rivers people. And we think that constitutionally those choices ought to be respected.
Austin Tam George is River State's Commissioner for Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Port Harcourt. Today's Monday, March 28th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. A suspected suicide bomber detained before she could detonate explosives in a town on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria says she is one of the girls kidnapped from a Nigerian school at Chibok in 2014. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Babila Akao, the highest-ranking official in Mayosava, an administrative area on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, says he asked the military and local self-defense groups to arrest or kill three suicide bombers his intelligence services and the population said had crossed over from Nigeria to Cameroon.
Yesterday in the night, we have information that three suicide bomb young women has been launched from Banki to Limani and Amshide. Immediately, I informed the duos of Kolfata and Mora and my colleague of the forces of law. And also, all the members of committee has been on the field and their work has given what you have seen today.
Idrisu Yakubu, leader of a self-defense group in Limani, says they arrested one of the girls before she could blow herself up. Another surrendered and the other escaped back to Nigeria. He says the girl who surrendered confessed she was one of the more than 200 girls seized 2 years ago by Boko Haram from the Nigerian town of Chibok and taken to the Sambisa forest strongholds of the terrorist group. He says the 15-year-old girl who told them she was kidnapped from a school in Chibok ran to a woman in a nearby house and started crying for help, while another older girl with explosives on her body panicked and surrendered. Idrisu said the 15-year-old girl looked tired and malnourished and could not give them more details about her stay in the forest or how other captives were treated. The girls have been handed over to Cameroon soldiers and their peers from Nigeria, Chad and Niger, members of the multinational joint forces fighting Boko Haram. Midji Yawa Bakari, governor of the far north region of Cameroon, has ordered investigations to find out the authenticity of the girls' declarations. He congratulated the self-defense groups for helping to stop Boko Haram atrocities. He says Boko Haram, which he says is on the verge of being eliminated, has changed strategy and is using all of its remaining supporters and captives as instruments to kill. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A new report on Eastern Congo says massacres of civilians since late 2014 in Beni territory near the Ugandan border have not just been the work of Ugandan Islamist rebels, the ADF, as previously believed. As Nick Long reports from London, the findings may point to the need for a different approach to violence in the area.
Attacks on civilians in the Beni region have killed at least 550 people in the past 18 months. Congolese officials have placed the blame on the Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF, which has been characterized as a Ugandan Islamist movement. Yet a new report from the Congo Research Group says it may not be that simple. Jason Stearns, lead author of the report, agrees the ADF was partly responsible, but says the group was not working alone.
First conclusion being that the ADF is not really what people make it out to be. It's not this foreign Islamist force. It's a force that is much more rooted in local society. And the second conclusion that it's not just the ADF, but also others involved in the massacres.
Researchers spent 6 months interviewing more than 100 people, including survivors of the attacks. The report cites various sources accusing local militias and members of the Congolese military. It says it's alleged that in some cases, men were promised up to $250 for each person they killed. As to who might have been paying them and why, Stern says his group is still working on that and has reached no conclusions. The authorities have arrested some individuals in the military for failing to take action against the ADF, but not specifically for involvement in the massacres, says Stearns.
Since the beginning of the massacres, there have been a few, I would say, very few individual arrests, again, mostly for inaction and not due to complicity. And I do not believe that any of them have actually been found guilty and those trials have gone through to their conclusion.
Local human rights groups suspect there may have been high-level complicity. Louis Saliboko is an activist in Oicha, a town near Beni. He says authorities can't say all the crimes were the work of the ADF alone. There was a sort of complicity, he alleges, because the ADF was able to operate with impunity. Saliboko and other local people say the killings sometimes happened close to military camps, but that soldiers ignored pleas to intervene and the killers walked away. Since mid-2015, the Congolese army has taken a more aggressive stance, and there has been increased fighting between soldiers and armed groups sometimes described as presumed ADF. A leader of civil society groups in the territory, Teddy Kataliko, says a thorough investigation is needed.
Nous demandons au gouvernement congolais qu'au-delà des campagnes militaires,
we call on the Congolese government, he says, to go beyond the military approach and to create a strong intelligence service so that the killers' networks can be dismantled and those collaborating with them brought to justice. Nick Long for VOA News, London.
The leaders of the Six Nation East African Community, ACA, are considering a proposal to ban the import of used vehicles, clothes and shoes in an attempt to promote local industry. It will be a major change because Kenya imports more than 100,000 metric tons of second-hand clothes for sale on the street each year. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi on the advantages and disadvantages of an import ban.
Suleiman Kamau has been selling second-hand clothes for 12 years at the toy market here in Kibera. He's worried about the proposed regional ban on second-hand clothes.
It's a bad blow because I'm educated. I went to school. I'm cool. I have a diploma, but I'm not employed. There's no employment. So this was my source of income. Instead of engaging in other illegal activities, this was the best.
Not only do sellers like Kamau depend on this trade for their living, but Kenyans also depend on it for affordable clothes. The goal of the ban would be to encourage local Kenyan industry. Economists agree that Africa needs to produce more finished products. The recent economic downturn in China has only highlighted the limits and risks of commodities-based growth. Industry leaders in Kenya support the ban.
If we have an opportunity where we're able to sell these goods in our local market, it then leads to the growth of that industry. And the second-hand traders, in my view, would also be able to sell these clothes in the local market because it's not limited to who can trade in manufactured clothes. So they would replace the product and sell it with locally manufactured goods.
Alpha Knits has been producing garments outside Nairobi for about 40 years. The business employs 600 people. Today, director Hiran Bedi checks fabric quality. He says it will take more than an import ban for him to compete with Mitumba, the Swahili word for used clothes.
If the power cost doesn't go down, then the cost will remain high, and then we cannot compete against the Mitumba. So there are certain factors which need to be addressed by government to help us get reasonable pricing for the people who are going to stop buying Mitumba.
An Alfanit sweater currently retails for about $5. That's about double what it costs to buy one second-hand. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
The 5 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Margot Woman in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak African sports news, we begin with football. Hosts Mozambique and Ghana drew 0-0 in Maputo in 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers on Sunday. Elsewhere, Guinea-Bissau pipped Kenya 1-0. Benin beat South Sudan 4-1. Botswana edged the Comoro Islands 2-1 as Republic of Congo and Zambia drew 1-1. On Saturday, Seychelles dismissed Lesotho 2-0 as Mauritius pipped Rwanda 1-0. Namibia beat Burundi 3-1. Cameroon and South Africa drew 2-2. Morocco pipped Cape Verde Islands 1-0. Senegal dismissed Niger 2-0. The Democratic Republic of Congo edged Angola 2-1 and Burkina Faso pipped Uganda 1-0. Earlier on Friday, African champions Ivory Coast pipped Sudan 1-0. Swaziland and Zimbabwe drew 1-1. Mauritania pipped Gambia 2-1. Guinea and Malawi drew 0-0. Tunisia edged Togo 1-0. Algeria mauled Ethiopia 7-1. Mali pipped Equatorial Guinea 1-0 as Nigeria and Egypt drew 1-1. Today, Monday, Libya host Sao Tome and Principe in Blida, Algeria. Zimbabwe play Swaziland. Central African Republic engage Madagascar and Equatorial Guinea face Mali. Meanwhile, Chad has withdrawn from this Nations Cup contest, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, revealed in Cairo, Egypt on Sunday. In accordance with competition rules, CAF fines Chad $20,000 and bans them from the 2019 Nations Cup. In women's football, Nigeria pipped South Africa 1-0, Cameroon beat Egypt 4-0, and Ghana swept aside Morocco 6-0 in the return leg of the FIFA Women's Under-17 World Cup qualifiers on Saturday. Nigeria, Cameroon, and Ghana prevail on aggregates of 7-0, 5-2, and 10-0 respectively. Meanwhile, hosts Ethiopia and Algeria drew 1-1 in the second leg of their 2016 Africa Women's Cup of Nations qualifiers in Addis Ababa. Algeria prevails 3-2 on aggregate. In athletics, Geoffrey Kamuror led Bedan Kuroki in a 1-2 Kenyan win in the men's action at the IWF World Half Marathon Championships in Cardiff, Wales in Britain on Saturday. Somalia-born Mohamed Farah of Britain clinched the bronze medal. Kenya reclaimed the team prize. Ethiopia is second, outgoing champions Eritrea third, and South Africa seventh. Meanwhile, Perez Jepchirchir, Cynthia Limo, and Mary Washira claimed a 1-2-3 Kenyan triumph in the women's race. Kenya retained the team title. Ethiopia is runner-up and South Africa 12th. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Monday morning, March 28th.
The twin terror attack at Busan Major Airport and train stations that killed scores of people and injured so many others is a proof that ISIS is a big threat to the whole world. Governments all over the world must come together, irrespective of religious inclination, to deal with this evil. If not kept now, nations can be said, no nation can be said to be saved anymore. Enough is enough. I am Okedugu Ajaka of Ezeonisa family on the Chado Kingdom, Anambra State, southeast of Nigeria. Thank you, VOA.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. And that's it for this Monday, March 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Can't get enough of the sunny side of sports? Well, we've solved that problem. We now have a half hour of sports talk and news, Monday through Friday, at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. So visit voanews.com for more details and enjoy the show.